We lived in a small apartment. You know, it was like me, my brother, my grandma, my sister was there. It's kind of like a lot of people in an apartment, but we were pretty happy, man. It was exciting.
Mauricio is a therapist in Las Vegas who moved to the United States from Brazil when he was 12 years old. I wanted to know what was that like for him, so I asked him to think back to that move. Here he is.
I spent a lot of time just in the apartment because I couldn't speak any English, didn't have any friends. It's kind of like that initial year was kind of like that. It got a little complicated once I went to school. You know, that excitement went down a little bit because it was hard to connect. The culture is very different. The culture shock actually hit me once I went to school. How easy it was for me to make friends in Brazil and maintain those friends and have big friend groups was very different here. And yeah, that lasted through my teen years. I just grew this part of my personality shifted, and to this day, I'm kind of like that, where I learned to be a little bit more introverted. I just learned to do things in my head, what I understood to be like the American way. But there was a big period of my life where I didn't really have anybody. It was just like me going to school and coming back home, walking to school and walking home, and like not a whole lot of people to talk to.
Here's his sister, Josie, also a therapist in Las Vegas. Even though she's 8 years older than Mauricio, they're very close, always have been. They have a tight-knit family, a lot of the same memories, except she was 20 when she moved to the U.S., an adult. She also did not speak English when first arriving. Here's what she remembers.
For me, the biggest fear was the language. I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't know how to count. I didn't know the letters of the alphabet. Like, I didn't know any word. I was zero as far as words. So that was the most scary part to me. Other people might be a visa situation. For other might be, am I going to be able to sustain myself? So for me, the biggest fear was definitely, it wasn't the culture. I was fascinated by, oh my gosh, I see this in movies all the time, and now I'm here experiencing. So I was fascinated by everything. I think I adapt very easily. I didn't feel lonely because I had my family and I had a very supportive church.
Cutting back now to Mauricio, talking about how he observed his parents react to the move. It felt a lot different from how he did, how he could as a kid.
My parents found other Brazilian people to connect with, and they kind of maintained, they had a much easier time kind of just maintaining the Brazilian thought process and feeling connected socially to other adults from my country through church or other things. For me, it was tougher, you know, because I'm looking at, I have to go to school and I have to be surrounded by kids who are not Brazilian. I have to, it's like you're forced, there's a part of the experience is pushing me out into the American culture. I think I've been here so damn long. Like at some point, my sister started asking me questions like, do you think in English now? Because I was just so just trying to assimilate into the culture that's like, yeah, at some point you stop thinking in your native language and your normal thought process, it embeds so much, right? And my parents were not, that's not the case with them. They were able to kind of maintain that cultural shield because they talk to each other. They still interact with, they subscribe to, you know, like Brazilian cable TV. They go to a Brazilian church, so they have kind of that some luxury of being able to shield themselves and stay socially Brazilian. Well, I have some Brazilian friends here that I've kept that are my age, and every once in a while they're like, they go back to Brazil and they come here. I haven't been back actually. I never went back. I've just been here the entire time. And they'll give me some flack for that. And I'm speaking to them in Portuguese and I forget words and my Portuguese is like spotty sometimes. So they'll make jokes, but like the thing I told you earlier that was so like socially difficult for me to assimilate here and like actually let go of the things that I loved about creating friend groups and stuff. It's hard to now go back and undo. So I would be for sure the awkward one. I know it easy. I can just predict that I would be like the hard one to, I would feel maybe cold or distant or that type of thing. And it would be hard to undo.
There's a term that was coined back in the 50s for people who spend their childhood in a culture that's different from the place listed on their passport, from their official home, which wasn't exactly the case for Mauricio. When he came to the United States, it was with the intent to stay, it was permanent. But his experience did convey what it's like a lot of times to move to a whole different country and immerse yourself in an entirely different culture during the developmental years, which third culture kids get. In many cases, they had that experience more than once, several times. The idea is that people in this situation integrate multiple cultures together, elements of their home culture with elements of the culture of the places they are currently or where they were raised, and these all mesh together into this third culture. Dr. Miranda Nadeau is a psychologist who specializes in working with third culture kids. She knows how unique this experience can be and themes that may show up in clinical work with this population. Here she is.
Yeah, so a third culture kid is someone who spends a significant amount of their childhood outside of their parents' culture or cultures, often due to family mobility. So diplomatic, military, missionary, corporate, academic families. So there's this moving around aspect of it. Third culture kids have grown up between cultures. So there's the first culture, which is the parents' culture or cultures. There's the second culture, the home culture, like where you're living, maybe in that moment. And the third culture, which is kind of this in between kind of blend of experiences and then relationships with other kids who have moved or are in a similar position as you. Does that make sense as far as the like third culture where we get that?
Yes, it does. It makes sense now. You know, I kind of had to dig a little bit into where that term came from, in part because I think like on your caseload, the third culture kids, I'm doing air quotes, aren't kids, but we still use that term for them. They're adults.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great point, right? But third culture kids, it's because it refers to that experience in childhood of the mobility and the different cultures. I think people who maybe grow up and stay in one place and then move around a lot for their own careers, you know, have a quite different experience of themselves and identity in the world. Kind of moving between cultures, being the child of an Asian immigrant, being multiracial, it all shaped a lot of my outlook, my experience of community, my sense of home. I would say later on as an adult, I think I still experienced people as a bit of a puzzle, not quite having a sense of belonging, but ended up connecting really deeply with a group of friends who were also third culture kids, people who'd immigrated as children or moved around a lot, academia or military or corporate kids. And my relationship with them changed a lot for me, as relationships can do, in terms of my sense of place, my sense of belonging, my sense of how I fit with other people in the world. And I found myself wanting to understand better, to connect, to use my own growth and healing to help others walking a similar path. So I think that's some of the motivation that I had to become a psychologist in the first place. And, you know, fast forwarding to now, I really love being a psychologist who can use my own life experience to guide and fuel my therapeutic work. So have a big interest in third culture kids because it feels like something I have a personal stake in. I think that's part of it, but I also think I have an understanding and a perspective that allows me to help in ways that maybe not everyone can help in the same way. On the one hand, the experience feels like the only thing you know, right? Just like for all of childhood, like we experience what we experience and, you know, that is what it is. We can't imagine it being different. And at the same time, there is a profound sense of being different from the people who are around you, the other children who are around you because of these experiences. Third culture kids often have a sense of not feeling at home in any one culture, and that can shape identity, a sense of belonging. It's an experience where, yes, I think there's a recognition of this is a unique and potentially special experience I'm having. And it's also something that makes me different from the people around me. It makes it harder for them to get me. It makes it harder for me to feel like I relate and belong. There are, I think, some repeated things that I see that I wouldn't say are universal in every family, but because the moving around happens usually because of a parent's career calling, something related to family factors that are outside of the child's hands, I think there are times when children can come to experience their parents as being maybe driven, maybe being committed to a particular cause or career, which is great to see, but it can also feel imbalanced in the way that this experience can be challenging in many ways for children. And to go through that for a parent's calling, right? It creates this kind of inherent friction. And so I've talked to some third culture kids who feel a lot of appreciation for their parents for taking them to interesting places and giving them such a rich and varied life. And I've also talked to third culture kids who hold some pain and resentment because of what that has brought in their lives in terms of themes they've experienced in their childhoods then. Having the perspective of knowing what some common themes and experiences are for third culture kids, I think can unlock a new, deeper understanding of what someone is experiencing. It can help explain or contextualize what someone's going through as an adult. But third culture kids may have an experience of feeling like they are from everywhere and from nowhere at the same time. This can show up in terms of therapeutically struggles with identity. Who am I? In what context? It can show up as struggles with belonging, with the sense of rootlessness, not having a stable, steady sense of this is from where I come. You know, belonging becomes this kind of moving target when where home is keeps shifting. When you think of a child who's moved around a lot or is maybe growing up in a culture that's different from parents' culture, and they are trying to make connections with classmates, they're trying to relate, they want to belong, they want to be liked, they want to connect, you know, just like every other child, and they do experience it differently. I think there's a sense of not just feeling different, but being treated differently. If you're new to a school, or if you've only been somewhere for a year or 2 years, you're going to have a different experience of your social life. And identity becomes this kind of mosaic rather than here's the checkbox that I fit into. It's more of a sense of in this context, right? While my family is here in Japan and I'm going to this international school, this is how I fit in. This is how I see myself. This is how I move through these social spaces. And then when I am in the US just a year later, I'm the new kid in school and I'm the kid who can speak another language. And, you know, so there are a lot of different factors that can kind of influence how someone feels in terms of who they are, how they fit in with others. I'd say another thing that shows up a lot in the clinical space is this sense of unrecognized, but perhaps quite pervasive loss and grief from childhood. Every move, you know, every move for a third culture kid comes with losses from friends, communities, the places, the culture, food, routines, languages, maybe even. And those goodbyes often go unnoticed or unmarked, really, and end up being more hidden so that third culture kids can carry with them just a lot of, I would say, unresolved loss. So I think it can be really powerful then in the clinical space to name those losses, to create space for there to be some grief there, to help third culture kids kind of integrate both what they've gained from their experiences in terms of adaptability, global awareness, and also what they've lost in terms of disconnection, instability. One thing that I think about that comes up in the clinical space a lot is a third culture kid's relationship with racial identity. I think that can be really interesting for third culture kids in particular, and is helpful to learn more about, because for third culture kids, racial identity is not a fixed thing. It can shift depending on where they are in the world, you know? So a white American child living in East Asia might experience being a racial minority for the first time, right? While a Black African child growing up in Europe may experience racialization in ways that are very different from their home country, right? And then your racial identity in terms of how it's constructed by others and by yourself is going to be different depending on geographically where you are. So there's this kind of constant renegotiation of self. You, as a third culture kid, may feel like you've never gotten to fully internalize a stable racial identity in one cultural context. You know, your sense of how others see me might be something that shifts, might be surprising at times. And for those reasons, experiences of privilege and marginalization can also shift and look different depending on where you are, right? When it comes to belonging and identity, white third culture kids experience this differently as well, and that they may have the privilege of being seen as global citizens, citizen of the world, you know, whereas peers of color who are third culture kids might be labeled as foreigners, outsiders, even in shared spaces. So that's one piece that I think is important that doesn't always have language put to it. But another big important theme I would say is that I've talked a lot, I think, about challenges and difficulties that come with being a third culture kid, but like with most things that challenge us, they also bring some resilience and some strengths with them as we move through them, right? So third culture kids are, I really like this phrase, third culture kids are like cultural chameleons. You know, they're incredibly adaptable, and they can fit in with different cultures. They can find a way to navigate perhaps in different spaces, but that can also come at the cost of authenticity, right? Authenticity to oneself or consistency between. So third culture kids get pretty good at reading social cues and are resilient in cross-cultural settings, are great people to go traveling abroad with, you know, but those strengths, I think, can also mask some distress that can be there when it comes to authenticity or stability. And clinically, I think it can be really powerful to definitely see, validate, celebrate the resilience, the strength that's there, but also be able to gently explore what's beneath that, the skills and the vulnerabilities that are there, and knowing how that can show up in the clinical space there's a great opportunity to acknowledge both in a world in which it's not always welcome to see both sides of the mask.
Do you find, like, if you do notice trends, and I know you talked about this a little bit already, but do you notice trends amongst adult, you know, clients who are third culture kids about, like, resentment, you know, maybe resentment and sort of having an experience that maybe revolved around someone else? And or I guess I should ask a separate question, but I'm also curious about sibling relationships, if those tend to be different.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I don't think that resentment is a universal experience in third culture kids. I think it's something that can happen, but there are so many losses and gains that come with the third culture kid experience. And it is, I think, a reflection of something broader in a dynamic between a child and a parent. If a child walks away from their upbringing with a sense of all I did for my parent, all I sacrificed for them, all that they required of me, you know, I think that reflects something broader than just the third culture kid experience. So I wouldn't say that's universal, but I think you ask such a great question when it comes to sibling relationships. I'm smiling because I have such a close relationship with my sibling. And I think that's a lot more common for third culture kids. I don't want to make that totally a global thing, but if you move around and your constancy, your stability, your one sense, your one place where you have that security is family, right? Families become incredibly close-knit. Siblings have the opportunity to become very close and to lean on each other, even as they're experiencing something challenging or nuanced that they may not have the words for. No one gets it like your sibling.
Are there other themes or just things that therapists need to be aware of when it comes to understanding working with third culture kids?
Working with third culture kids, I'd say it's incredibly helpful to lean into this practice of cultural humility. It shows up uniquely for third culture kids, even compared to children of immigrants, folks of color, folks of the global majority, because of some of these things that we've talked about, but also because third culture kids are, by nature of the moving around and adapting to different cultures, so highly adaptable and skilled at adapting to other people, which means that they might adapt to the therapist that they're sitting with as well, right? So third culture kids, when they might have had more transient relationships in the past, they may be cautious about building trust while also unconsciously adapting or becoming what they think the therapist wants, saying what they think the therapist wants to hear inadvertently, or being who they imagine the therapist wants them to be, right? So it's so valuable when a therapist can create a space where a third culture kid's full authentic self is welcome, is encouraged, and the therapeutic relationship itself can model stability and belonging in a life that's been full of transitions by inviting clients to bring all parts of their identity into the room. Doing some exploration of, you know, what is the mask and what's behind the mask? What are the skills or the strengths and the losses? Who are you fully in all of your dimensions, not just in this room, not just in this country, not just in this culture, but what makes you who you are in a broader sense? I think one way to do that, I've mentioned this kind of mask exercise, right? But I think another valuable way to do that is in exploring values, to get a sense at what is the home within a client? I'm inviting the client to identify what makes them feel like themselves across all contexts, you know, whether that's rituals, music, food, objects, phrases, anything that like anchors them to their own sense of self in a more stable way. And this can really build a client's sense of internal stability, belonging in that space. Another one that I really like that borrows a bit from acceptance and commitment therapy and those approaches is doing a values-based exploration, like not just who am I in this place, but what matters to me wherever I go. So exploring with a client, what are your values? What is it that your heart longs for, no matter where you are geographically? And it kind of goes beyond that role or performance of being in a one space to connecting with someone in a broader sense of who they are. It can take a while to melt the defenses to communicate to a client, no, really, I get where you're coming from, right? We have to do that work with all clients, the rapport building, the gaining of buy-in, this process where you're really helping a client to see, I do care and I'm interested and I'm curious and I want to know more about these things. I think with third culture kids, it can take a little bit longer, not to get to a point of like good rapport, right? Because of that adaptability and they are there, they're willing to be there, right? But in terms of really getting to know them and then being willing to open up about who they are in all of these different contexts, right? I think it can take a lot of consistency, but with third culture kids, I think of consistency as its own kind of intervention. When third culture kids have experienced some change in their life, we can maintain reliable session structure. We can maintain start and end times that feel consistent and reliable. We can have clear boundaries and we can check in about transitions that happen, like breaks in therapy. And, you know, a therapist goes out of town, right? And you talk about it. You model what a consistent and stable relationship is going to look like. It's for that reason that I also put a lot of emphasis on the termination process with third culture kids in particular, because these clients have experienced goodbyes and losses, sometimes unacknowledged in the past, because they may have experienced these ruptures in relationships that didn't get to be repaired. I think it's really valuable when a therapist can provide this collaborative opportunity leading up to termination, where maybe there's a ritual that you do together. Maybe there's a reflection, a letter, a summary of growth, however that looks to you, you know, conversation, poem, playlist, whatever, right? Some kind of symbolic goodbye that can really make a difference when they haven't always had that. While we all try to learn and practice more cultural humility, I think the more specific cases of third culture kids can be such a fun opportunity to learn, because there is a whole world outside of ourselves, right? It's this chance to, when we can learn about the experience of third culture kids, it's a way to integrate maybe a lot of building blocks you may have around cultural humility, and then get to really challenge yourself, ask yourself the difficult questions, recognize the subtleties in the clinical space that you might not have before, show up for the client in a way that maybe not everyone can show up for them.